counsel. To put this case in proper perspective, we've got to step back and look at this case in terms of some pretty basic first principles. First, and the most important one is that the federal rules of civil procedure are to be interpreted so as to do substantial justice for the parties. The purpose of products liability law is to provide manufacturers with an economic incentive to make products as safe as they reasonably can. And then the third premise is that the difference between products liability actions and other general negligence actions is that in product liability actions, we focus on the product and not the conduct of the parties. We got that backwards in this case. We focused on the conduct of some rep entity. It should be clear in the record that there are several, that Rep International, there's a Rep International that doesn't appear on all the documents. There's a Rep France, which manufactures this equipment, and then they have a distribution system throughout the world. They have Rep Corporation is the only distributor of these products in the United States and the only seller of these products in the United States, and the company that installed and set this machine up in the first place, and most importantly, because this affects another important question down the road, they're the ones that fixed this product after Danny Williams got hurt. We got to remember this product was installed in, I'm not sure of the exact date, it's July, between July 12th and July 14th. They spent 2 days putting the equipment in. And then they came, and by July 31st, Danny was hurt. And then they came back before their report that is in the supplemental appendix, because that's another important thing, goes to the jurisdictional issue, and that's the fact that there is a monthly report that Rep Corporation does, and that monthly report is very specific, and in the August of 1995 report is not only the report of the installation of the machine, the report that it was fixed, and that Mr. Greco, who sends his affidavits in this case in French and his faxes in English, daughter had just spent 2 weeks there. So this memo is pretty specific. In other words, everything that had all of the decisions that the court has made in Rep's favor are based on Rep's own actions. They gave credit to the sale of these 15 machines to a corporation who's outside of I think Rep Deutschland, I would even agree, is outside the jurisdiction of the court in this case. But anyhow, what Rep's done is they've engaged in a very successful corporate shell game. I'm not going to say that's what they intended, but I can tell you if you sustain the decision in this case, you're going to provide an excellent blueprint as to how a multinational corporation can sell products in this country and not be responsible if someone finds that they're defective. What was the advice that Deep Throat gave Woodward and Bernstein? Follow the money. In this case, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter which Rep entity is the defendant in this case, the money's going to come out of the same pocket. The profits go to the same pocket. These are all wholly owned subsidiaries. Counsel for the defendant has indicated that I want this court to ignore a proper legal status of corporations. And I would say if that's what it took to do substantial justice in this case, that's exactly what should be done. I don't think that's necessary. Outcome in a products case shouldn't be determined by semantics. That's exactly what happened here. Indiana Products Act, or this is not a warranty claim, a sales claim. Indiana Products Act refers to sellers, manufacturers, lessors. And the only reason that Rep Corporation is not considered a seller is because Rep entities said it was not. It is in reality that there's absolutely no question, none whatsoever, under the Act, that Rep Corporation, the Illinois Corporation, is a manufacturer because the Act specifically says, for purpose of this chapter, manufacturer includes a seller who is owned in whole or significant part by the manufacturer. It also says that a seller is a person engaged in the business of selling or leasing a product for resale use or consumption. So we've got somebody that clearly meets the definition.
Well, Rep didn't sell anything here, though, did it?
Yes. Well, again, what we're talking about is that's semantics. I mean, what do we talk about sale? Corporate concept. This was a transaction that a rep team of Rep France, Rep Deutschland, and Rep Corporation put together. Rep Corporation didn't get paid to install this machine in the way that a normal installer would get paid. They got paid a commission on the sale. Let's say for sake of argument that instead of us dealing with a wholly owned subsidiary, that what had happened is somebody in the United States had merely brokered this piece of equipment. All they did was take the crate in here, send it out the door. They would have been held responsible here, and they would have probably been paid a commission on the sale because they would have been a wholesaler or a retailer in the traditional sense. That's what happened when the Act was amended in 95. They eliminated the downstream liability for wholesalers and retailers, and that's probably as it should be. In this case, you don't have a classic wholesaler or retailer. And it also, and as I've said, the Act, not only does the Act make them a manufacturer, the Act comes back again, and we've got to remember that what the court's doing or what the legislature did in 1995 when it eliminated downstream liability, they said, we're going to eliminate liability for anyone except the manufacturer, except that, and we have on the, that's the one. And the other one is whether or not they're able to hold jurisdiction.
Now, suppose you can get jurisdiction over Rep France. Would you still be able to get jurisdiction under the statute over Rep USA?
Well, the answer to that has to be yes, because you have another question. It's what do they mean by get jurisdiction? Do we mean that we're going to obtain service through the Hague Convention, or do we mean that we're going to obtain service in some other manner? I think where we really, I frankly want to get rid of this game that we play with foreign corporations. I don't want documents in French. I don't want documents in German. I don't want them in Japanese, not when they've got them in English. I don't want to pay a translator for somebody who speaks English better than I do so that I can understand what he's saying. That's where I wanted the Indiana Supreme Court to get involved. But we don't have to do that. What we have to look at is the very thing that the defendant pointed out in their brief that I failed to address in mine, and that's what gives rise to strict liability in tort. It says a person who sells, leases, or otherwise puts into the stream of commerce any product in a defective condition. A person who sells, leases, or otherwise puts in the stream of commerce is awfully broad to me. I think that as to the jurisdictional issue, if they can convince you that they sent 15 machines to Shelbyville, Indiana, and they didn't know that they were going to Shelbyville, Indiana, or they didn't know they were going to Indiana, then I don't think there's much I can do about that. I think if you look again,
with respect to this machine, did they know? Did Rep France know this machine was going to Indiana?
Well, it is not clear that it did, except it is the one that told in the same. Well, I'm sorry, that's another memo. There's a memo that went to Rep Corporation that certainly told that it got here, told them it got installed, told them that Danny Williams got hurt. They reported each time they installed each piece of equipment. You look in the monthly report, you're going to see. So we were here. We installed the equipment. I think that
the machine was set up for American standards, am I correct?
Absolutely.
And who told Rep USA to install the machine?
Well, it was Rep France. I mean, well, I don't know that it's Rep France. Somebody, Mr. Greco, is the one that sent the fax that said, you know, by the way, we forgot to tell you about this, but MB is going to get this machine, and you're going to put it up. And it says we're going to install a machine.
When was that fax sent? Where was the machine when that fax was sent?
It was in Holland at that time, I believe, because that's when they point out the fact that it was misshipped to Holland. But
misshipped?
Pardon?
Misshipped?
Yes.
Where was it supposed to be shipped to?
I assume it was supposed to be shipped where it was going to be installed.
So your view is Rep France was supposed to ship this directly to Indiana?
I would suspect. I mean, that's the thing.
Do you have documentation to back that up?
Pardon?
Do you have documentation to back that theory up?
No. No. I mean, we have everything is in Rep's documents. But they stole, on the jurisdictional issue, they stole 15 machines. And on the jurisdictional issue, we look at all of that. It's whether it's reasonable. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm out of time. Pardon me. I apologize.
May it please the court, my name is Nelson Nettles, and I represent the appellees, Rep Corporation and Rep International. We've talked about an entity called Rep France, although I believe the documents show that that entity is, there really is no entity named Rep France. It really is Rep International, who's the manufacturer of the machine. And both of those entities, Rep Corporation, who's in the United States, and Rep International, who's in France, are owned by Rep, who's also a French company.
Now, well, this issue, I don't think we have to concentrate on it. I think it's a very important case. Did Rep International know that this machine was going to Indiana?
They knew after the sale. The documents that are in the record show that they did know that after the sale. And our contention is, and we're talking about specific jurisdiction issue here, our contention is that post-sale knowledge is not relevant. You have to look at what did they know at the time of the sale. In this case, Rep International sold the machine, the Prefet issue, to Rep Deutschland. Rep Deutschland turned and sold it to ENBI Holland. ENBI Holland then shipped it to Then shipped it to ENBI Shelbyville, which is plaintiff's employer.
And this all took place in about how much time?
Probably a month or two.
And your colleague says that this was all a mistake, that Rep International was supposed to ship this machine directly to Shelbyville, Indiana.
I don't believe there's any evidence in the record that would support that.
Now, the machine was manufactured according to United States safety specifications, so Rep International must have known this thing was coming to the United States.
Not necessarily. It could have been manufactured that way to be used over in Europe. It just depends on how the standards compare. European standards.
Once it got out of the Rep Deutschland, etc. But did it know when it got to a purchaser that purchaser had a manufacturing facility in the United States?
I'm not aware.
Business before, right?
I'm not aware of anything about that in the record.
Had these folks done business before?
Between which entities?
Between Rep International and the ultimate consumer in Indiana.
Not directly, but through Rep Deutschland and ENBI Holland.
They had.
Correct.
Okay. So had any of those transactions gone through Rep USA?
I do not believe so.
No.
No.
So these folks have been doing business for a while together.
Correct.
Does the record show whether Rep International knew that this was going to ENBI Holland when it sold the machine? It was going through its subsidiaries, I understand that, but they knew it was going to Holland to those folks?
I don't think there's any evidence in the record that shows that. I think we're all talking about specific jurisdiction here. The issue is what this all gets back to, and I think the district court, in this case, assumed that there was specific jurisdiction when it issued its ruling in favor of Rep International, and it based its ruling on Indiana Trial Rule 4.4, the long-arm jurisdiction of Indiana. And plaintiff did not raise that issue in the district court and has not really raised it in the briefs here. And therefore, we think that's the valid basis for affirming the dismissal of Rep International. There was also a second ground for...
Fly that past me again. You said it in the brief, too, and I went back over the trial rule and had a very hard time seeing that, for it, frankly. It may be crucial. I mean, is that Indiana trial rule, in your view, both specific, involve both generally affiliating jurisdiction or specifically affiliating jurisdiction, or just one?
It's a precursor to before you even get to the general or specific. Under the standards, first of all, you have to determine does the state have long-arm jurisdiction, and then you get to the constitutional issue. In this case, the long-arm jurisdiction of Indiana would come from Trial Rule 4.4. The district court analyzed Trial Rule 4.4 and determined it wasn't jurisdiction.
Well, my point is, isn't the Indiana trial rule embody various nexes for jurisdiction, some of which can be justified as specifically affiliating nexes and some which can be justified as generally affiliating nexes?
I would agree that they're similar to those issues, correct?
Now, the one we're talking about here, is that a generally or a specifically affiliating nexus in your view?
In my view, it associates with neither one in this case, because Rep International had no general connections with Indiana, and no specific connections either. The other issue on jurisdiction for Rep International is does the assertion of jurisdiction over Rep International comport with fair play and substantial justice? Judge Tender, in this case, assumed that there was specific jurisdiction and then went to the next step in the Asahi and Burger King cases and looked at the factors as to whether it would be comport with fair play and substantial justice to assert jurisdiction over Rep International in a case like this. And that was the second basis for the trial courts.
Can we really sustain that? You know, this company sold how many machines to an entity in Indiana? I mean, it's a big international manufacturer. Selling machines to the United States, you can escape the jurisdiction of our court because it's a hardship to them?
This company sold no machines directly to the United States. It was through other corporations that they got to the United States.
It seemed to be their channel of doing business with the United States through their subsidiaries.
I would disagree with that because almost all the business of Rep International, if they were going to sell machines in the United States, almost all that business usually went through Rep Corporation, the Illinois entity. It was only because the plaintiff's employer decided to use this roundabout way to bring machines to the United States that those machines came here. And I don't know the reason for that, but if the plaintiff's employer had bought these machines directly from Rep Corporation, as most other businesses do in the United States, we wouldn't have that issue at all.
Did Rep International know that this machine was going to be used in the U.S.?
That's not clear. At some point, they did learn that, but I believe the
when
only
is that point.
The evidence in the record is that it was after the sale, the initial sale to Rep Deutschland, that they learned. Okay,
even though that they had been selling to them before, they didn't know that this one was going to be sold.
Correct.
You're saying it with a straight face. You really believe that?
I can only go by on what's on the record,
right.
Your Honor.
So in your view, the only reason that Rep International had any contact with Indiana was because its customer decided to take possession of the machine in Europe and send it on itself.
Correct.
Otherwise, Rep International would have sold this machine to Rep USA and let Rep USA handle the deal.
Correct.
That was your normal course of doing business with American entities.
Correct. That's why we think this case is analogous to the Worldwide Volkswagen case, where it was the customer who took the product to the forum where the accident happened, as opposed to the manufacturer sending the product to that forum.
Of course, if under your usual way of doing business through a wholly owned subsidiary in the United States, it'd be pretty hard to say that Rep International had not structured its business relationships so that it knew its product was going to end up in the United States, right? It had a structure, a corporate structure, so that its machines got to Shelbyville.
Products sold through Rep Corporation, they knew those could be used in the United States, sure.
All right, proceed with your argument.
Okay. The other argument against Rep Corp, the district court granted summary judgment to Rep Corp on the Indiana product liability statute. The sole claim was one for a defective condition in the product, the press. The argument is that, well, Rep Corporation is a manufacturer under the statute, but what plaintiff's argument has ignored is Section 3C, which says they have to be even if the statute deems them a manufacturer by operation of the statute as opposed to factually the manufacturer, they still had to have been the manufacturer of the product in issue. And because this press got to Indiana through the roundabout way rather than directly through Rep Corp, they never did directly sell the product in this case, so therefore the product liability statute would not apply here. Unless there are any other questions, I thank your honors.
Can I say anything else, Your Honor? All right, that's all, counsel. The court will take the case under advisement and proceed to case number 3, please.